pick up the air of Jerusalem. Anyone else here? I don't even see a new face. All right, we'll see what happens. It's unbelievable. In old days, no one missed my classes. That's going back 20, 30, 40 years ago. But today, no one comes to my classes. The Yoredeir and the Gemara that they have exams in is like overwhelming, and what I'm teaching is a joke. Who needs it? All right. Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. I don't know. I have my own opinions, but we'll allow time to prove me right or wrong. Can we begin? Today is Monday. It's not already September 11th. That was yesterday, a very auspicious day. Today is September 12th, 2016. And we started the new year yesterday. And as I mentioned yesterday, for the duration of the year, my name has changed. It is Noach Rakefet, Nun Chet. And the reason is very simple. It's my 58th year of teaching Torah. So if it's 58 years of teaching Torah, you have to be called Noach, not Aharon. Last year, if you recall, I used only Heinz products, the 57 varieties. Now, the history of this course is very simple. Back, as I explained yesterday, when the Kollel began, we began a formal program, and I play a big role in being responsible for what happened, Min HaShemayim Zikuni, that I was able to befriend Mr. Gris, say the right words to him, and as they say, the rest is history. In retrospect, I probably gave YU a gift. That's one of the greatest gifts they ever got. I mean, this campus is worth tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars. It's somebody we have still have the right, without any variance, to build two more multi-story buildings on this campus. Machon Lev is looking at it with their tongue sticking out. But when all is said and done, the miracle is that it enabled us to teach Torah and to develop ourselves and reach a certain level. What happened was I began, as I explained yesterday, with the course in response to literature because I wanted to do something that no one else was doing, something unique, and find my own way. Rabbi Lichtenstein was doing his thing, and Nechama Leibowitz was doing her thing. Reb David Miller was Reb Aaron's assistant and doing the Chazarah Shir at that time. And I went into response to literature. About 2 years later, maybe a year later, the boys pleaded with me to give a second class and deal with more contemporary matters. So I started a second class. Remember the first year I gave a very basic hashkafa class, not much different than what I did on a collegiate level in Midrashit Moriah, for instance, occasionally in the Kollel, occasionally in Machon Gold. And then I began a 22-year program dealing with the Rav, and it continued. I did a four-year class on history of Torah in modern times. Then I spent 10 years on questions students have asked me and what I've answered. And then I decided for the first time to teach something I know. As you recall, my mother took very ill and died, Zichrono Livracha. And Rabbi Lichtenstein, I found out how ill he was, and it really shook me up because that was the first time I recognized my age. Kolzman, you have a mother and you visit every morning and she says, Ani, how are you? You don't think you're any older than 21, 22. So I decided to teach the history of Torah in the United States. And this, I think, is the fifth year that we're on the topic. I reached the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I saw smirks on the faces of the younger students. I knew right away their reverence, their relationship to the Rebbe, the messianicism quandary. And I decided, let me teach the Rebbe and let's try to understand who he was and what he did. And that's where we are today. We're finishing up. We still have a number of lectures to go. But the Rebbe has proved a very enticing and a very interesting topic. So I want to pick up exactly where we left off last time. If you recall the last year, and I have interesting information to show you, the last year we spoke about could the Rebbe be Mashiach once the Rebbe died. We would like to think that all this talk about the Rebbe being Mashiach is behind us, is over. And I showed you the Gemara in Lechelek. And if you recall, the Gemara talks about who Mashiach is. If he's among the living, he could be like this one. If he's among the dead, he would be like this one. And the basic pshat in the Gemara means that if we want an example from the living, we'll take Rabbeinu HaKadosh. If we want an example from those who are dead, we can take Daniel, Ish Hamudot, etc. That's the simple pshat. Rashi brings another pshat where Rashi says it means literally, not figuratively, that Mashiach can come from the dead. And we ended off the class and we showed you a letter of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik where Rav Aaron Soloveitchik signed up with Chabad and said it is possible that Mashiach can come from the dead. And that's the way we ended the class last year. So number one, I want to add one more source that Yomo came up with. He told me just by chance, he was looking for this source, but by chance, he was looking in the Sefer HaZoah, Pashet Lech Lecha, Pei Bet Amid Bet. In the Zohar we have downstairs in the library with a Hebrew explanation, Matok Midvash, it's on page Resh Samach Aleph. And here the Gemara speaks about, here not the Gemara, I should say the Zohar speaks about that what does it mean, David Melech Yisrael Chai Li'olam, and again, he is the prototype of Mashiach Tzidkenu. It seems there are two different pshatim in the Zohar. Either it's David HaMelech when he will be alive, or it's David HaMelech, not the one who lived long ago, but the one coming back from the dead, resuscitation. And once again, you see that Mashiach can be, take it literally, take it figuratively, but there is an opinion that Mashiach can be dead and rise, and that's that Gisar and Rashi. Now, I mentioned this in class, and as you know, for better or for worse, a lot of people are listening. Fine, a lot of people are listening, and it reached the Soloveitchik family, Rabban Soloveitchik's family. So his grandson, the son of my dear friend, Rafi Marcus, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, Rabbi Rafal Marcus, it reached the ears of Shmuel Soloveitchik. So Shmuel told me that there's a letter written a number of years later that the family was upset that the Lubavitchers, the Chabadnikim, were quoting Rav Aaron Soloveitchik that Mashiach can be from the dead. And he said, no, my grandfather signed a different letter 8 years later where he toned down a bit. And I'll read the letter to you in a second. But the heart of the letter, and this is quoted, I've seen others quote it, that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said that it's a mishigas that the Chabadnik, and I'm calling Rav Aaron now, I'm not trying to offend Alex, Chas v'Chalila, or Asher, but I'm calling Rav Aaron Soloveitchik that it's a mishigas what the Chabadnik say, that the Rebbe can be one who rises from the dead, but it's not a bikursus. Because evidently, Rav Aaron also, I mean, if Aaron Lakefet, if Noach Rakefet can quote a Gemara in Sanhedrin, a Rashi, so Rav Aaron Soloveitchik knows it too. So, I'll read the letter to you, June 22nd, 2000, to my great dismay. Now, I don't know if Rav Aaron composed the letter or his family. To my great dismay, I was recently informed that certain publications affiliated with the Lubavitch movement have persisted in stating that I validate their belief that a Jewish Messiah may be resurrected from the dead. I completely reject and vigorously deny any such claim. As I've already stated publicly, such a belief is repugnant to Judaism and the antithesis of the truth. My intent in signing the original letter cited by these publications was merely to express my opinion that we should not label subscribers to this belief as heretics. I believe that they mean well, but unfortunately, they are nevertheless misguided. Any statement in that letter which implies an endorsement of their view were not shown to me at the time I signed, and I once again repudiate any such ridiculous claim. And it's signed Aaron Soloveitchik. And the family told me essentially what Rav Aaron said was, they're mishugayim, but they're not apikarsim. So I cite the letter. You saw what we cited before when we quoted the Gemara, and you saw what the Baron Soloveitchik, the letter that he had signed approximately 6 years previously. And I'll end off this discussion and say it really, la halacha la maisa, plays no role at all. And that's the Rambam I showed you, and that Rambam is crucially, crucially important. If we know that Rambam, it spares us a lot of heartache, a lot of machlokes, a lot of controversy, a lot of dialogue. The whole Zionist movement and the whole reaction to the Zionist movement would have been different if we know that Rambam and take Maimonides seriously. And that, of course, is the Rambam, Hilchot Melachim, Perek Yud Bet, Halacha Bet, where the Rambam says, paraphrasing the Gemara in Chelek, Tipach Ruchim Shem Chashvei Kitzim. And the Rambam says, anyone who tries to figure out how the ultimate redemption will be, may he drop dead. Those are strong words. Tipach Ruchim Shem Chashvei Kitzim. And what the Rambam is telling us, and I'm quoting the Rambam, there is so much contradiction among the sages. We won't know how it will happen until it actually happens. And I have to tell you, the branches of the Soloveitchik family I spoke to agreed with me that halacha lemaisa, what are we going to argue with the Chabadnikim and the Messianicisms and the two Perushim and Rashi and Rabban Soloveitchik, the first letter, the second letter? Let's wait and see. Certain things are happening. There's a process at work. Just think for a minute that we're on the way to 7 million halachic Jews in the state of Israel. Well, you have to live it. You have to see it. You have to experience it. Could be that had everyone taken on the Zionist mandate, we could not have succeeded. The country wasn't ready for 10 million Jews to come back at once. I mean, it's an interesting thought. Just think how this country had to be developed, how an industry had to be forged, how an economy had to be forged, how an army had to be forged, how universities had to be created, how high-tech had the Silicon Valley of Israel. Everything is a process. So you see, who could predict this? The Gemara has unbelievable stories about Latid Lavol. There's a Gemara in Shabbos that in the future, clothes from Israel and food from Israel will be exported all over the world. No, who could believe that Gemara? We're going to export all over the world? Look today, Israeli designers, fashion, top people in the world, award-winning food. If you go to Russia and you want to bring someone a gift, you have to buy vafelim from the Mann factory in Haifa. That's what they love in Russia. The Mann factory had to double its size when the Iron Curtain fell to meet the demands from the former Soviet Union. So you see, it's a process, and there's no sense getting involved in machloket and arguing and maledicting and dialoguing and playing the game, who is firmer than who, and whose hashkaf is right. Let it roll. Give it a chance. Look what's happening before our eyes. Did anyone ever dream, if you would tell Ben-Gurion, that the time would come that the head of the Mossad would be a Jew who doesn't miss Tefillat Mincha? The head of the Shabbat would be a Jew who doesn't miss the Tefillat Mincha. The head of the army, the head of the police, the top cop in the country is a yeshiva boy like all of us. If I felt Mishta Mincha, he can give a good Devar Torah on Shabbos. How many generals already, major generals? I remember when I met the Aluf Pikud HaMerkaz a number of years ago, Yair Naveh. I thought I'm looking at a gabbai stepping out of a shul on the Lower East Side of New York. And there was a Hachnasat Sefer Torah, a Torah that my wife got for the Israeli army. He was dancing and leading and singing and Atah HaReita, Mamish Ben-Gurion would have heart failure. His wife would have bigger heart failure. She, her hatred for Torah and anything Jewish was unbelievable. It's a very interesting that the women, there's an expression in Yiddish, a rab's hatachta, a rabbi's daughter. I don't want to elaborate on that expression, but when women hate Yiddishkeit, they hate it much more than a man. It's interesting. There has to be psychological reasons why. You have to ask a psychologist who specializes in the feminine mystique, the feminine personality. When they hate Yiddishkeit, they hate it infinitely more. They say about Vera Weitzman that when a Hasidic Jew, she outlived her husband by many years, she lived on the campus. I'm telling Morty, he knows what I'm talking about. Rechavat, she had an apartment on the campus, and they say when a Hasidic Jew walked on the campus, she was cursing. She couldn't believe it. She was cursing mad that these type of Jews, like where she comes from, still survive. I heard this from people who it happened to in the days that there was no transportation, and Ben Gurion, who taka was a chalutz and lived simply, went down to stay boker. So on Friday, he was going from Tel Aviv to stay boker for the weekend. During the week, he lived in Tel Aviv because that's where all the government meetings were. And he had this big car being driven by a chauffeur, prime minister, minister of defense, the state of Israel. And they stopped to give a lift to two soldiers. And in the car, these soldiers took off their kumtat, their berets, and both of them had kippot on. And they say Paula Ben-Gurion was sitting in the car, cursing, furious, that Jews still wear kippot in her car. So that's why I acknowledge the first letter of Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. I acknowledge the second letter, but halacha l'maisa, I'm not going to argue with Rashi. It can be taken literally, it can be taken figuratively. It really doesn't matter at this stage. We'll find out who is correct when it actually happens. B'toach ishen, I don't have to tell you what Chazal said. If we're zeicher, it happens at once. If we're not zeicher, it happens b'ito, later. But it's a process, a magnificent process. And we're all part of it. I just said to a young lady that I helped inspire to bring her an aliyah, and she came on the second plane of Nefesh B'Nefesh. I think there are three planes this summer. She was on the middle one. So I asked her, she's now here a few good weeks, and I said, do you understand what you're part of now? When you go to vote in the next election, your vote may help determine whether the country will be Shomer Shabbos, whether the country will observe Kashrut, whether the country will Taret Mishpacha. This is a lot different than voting in America for Clinton or for Trump. Okay, but now, yes, Yitzchak, I'm ready to go further.
You came late. Where is this Rashi?
We spoke with it last year. It's the Gemara in Sanhedrin. One second, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Tzadi Chet Amid Bet. That's the Gemara. Tzadi Chet Amid Bet. We dealt with it last year. It's in Chaylet. Tzadi Chet Amid Bet. Okay. But now I want to go one step further. And I want to come back to a volume that I quoted, and I see there's a new face here. Next week I form a class list. I never form, but if you've joined the class, I'm very happy to see you. Because as you see, we have a lot of good old-timers here, but we're looking for new-timers so that there'll be a tomorrow. Without new-timers, there's no tomorrow. So this is a volume that I dismissed, and I'll repeat it to you again. I'm quoting from the Rebbe Milubavitch, B'chayagu B'chayim Shliacham Moto, by Menachem Friedman and Shmuel Heilman. It's by Samuel Heilman, the American well-known sociologist, and by Menachem Friedman, who's the well-known Jewish sociologist in Israel. I believe he teaches or taught at Bar Ilan. He took the place of Charlie Liebman, who was the big expert on Orthodox Judaism in the contemporary world. So this volume, if you're familiar with it, it sold quite well in Israel. I don't know, I would imagine there's an American version. I don't even know which came first. I think the Israeli version came after the American version. Do you know, Alex? Am I right?
I think the book was written in English first.
Written in English first and then translated. Could be. That's what I think. So I mentioned to you that if you read the volume, it's like there's a hidden agenda. The volume tries to show that the Rebbe was running away, who knows, in France. It's very unfair and it's very untrue. The Rebbe, when he reached Paris, and this is my humble opinion, and I challenge anyone, you can't prove me wrong, but I challenge anyone to say I'm not right. The Rebbe, when he reached Paris, was absolutely convinced, like everyone else was convinced, that Rav Shmaya Guraye would be the next Rebbe, would succeed his father-in-law. Rav Shmaya Guraye lived with the Rebbe, accompanied the Rebbe, went to America with the Rebbe, went to Palestine with the Rebbe. His hand did not leave the Rebbe's hand, the sixth Rebbe's hand. Now, Rav Menachem Mendel was very loyal to his father-in-law, this goes without saying, but he was in Paris, they were happy in Paris, his wife was with him, his wife's sister there with the brother-in-law. Later they died in the Holocaust because they went back there to help his parents. I mean, it's so sad, so sad. The Ragged Shabbos daughter, you should know, she was living in Israel. She was, her husband had been the chief rabbi of Petah Tikva, Rabbi Sitrin. And he died, and the Ragged Shabbos died, and she went back to help arrange his writings and save them. And she got caught in the Holocaust and perished in the Holocaust, an Israeli, Palestinian citizen who went back, Lidva Mitzvah. So it's very sad what ultimately happened. They were very happy in Paris. And Rebbe saw himself like a good chassid. He would make a living and be a chassid and maybe be the representative of Chabad in Paris. But it's not that he was running away from anything. Why do people have to read such intent into just realize the Rebbe, the Rav had totally different dreams when he came to America. The Rav's first 10 years in America, he had one dream and one dream only: to be an American rabbi like Reb Lazer Silva. Reb Lazer Silva was his role model. This was his dream. Then he got involved with a tremendous dream to become what's going to be announced shortly, the president of Yeshiva College and Yeshiva, what today is known as Yeshiva University. Could you imagine what would have happened had the Rebbe achieved being a Reb Lazer Silva, or if he would have achieved the presidency of Yeshiva University? We would not be sitting here, okay? I wouldn't be teaching and you wouldn't be here. You're here to hear Noach tell stories and tell jokes, okay? But you wouldn't be here and I wouldn't be here, let's be honest. And God willed otherwise. In May 1941, for 15, 20 youngsters, the Rav gave a shiur on a sugyam Baba Batra, on Otiot Niknot B'Mesira. How do you pass a shtaran? How do you gain the validation, the achrayat, the chitchayvut that's in a shtar? That was the first shiur he gave. And out of that little classroom, Rabbi Soloveitchik became the Rav. And as long as Jews walk the face of the earth, they will be citing his published writings. Same thing with the Rebbe, 100%. He was entitled to feel he wanted to be an engineer. He wanted to make a living. He didn't want to be a charity case. Pardon me. Hasidim until today work, right or wrong. All the Hasidim I know, even if they learn in a kollel, they're limited. I think that many Hasidiyot limit kollel learning 2 years. That's it. The literature world came up with a whole new idea that a Jew is not allowed to work. He has to sit and learn all his life. That's a literature idea. Where they got it from, I don't know, because in my Torah it says, Sheshet Yamim Tasem Alachtecha. In my Torah it talks about Yofet HaMetorim Derech Eretz. In my Torah, the Shas is filled with all types of stories of people working and making a living and money transferring and kinyonim and mishicha and shtut and choshen mishpat and all that goes with it and how much profit you can make. But chassidim, what's wrong? Okay, so a large part of the volume, I said, has to be taken with a grain of salt. But I want to say the final chapter that deals with the post period after the Rebbe died is excellent, and it's very well balanced and very fair. And I want to take this as my text. I'm now quoting from this volume. which I Harebi Milubavitch b'chayav u'b'chayim shleacha chayav, beginning on page 272. Now I will elaborate and bring it up to what I consider bring it up to date. And here I have to say I had a wonderful experience this summer as a result of, I guess, the Shayurim on Chabad, although even before I gave the Shayurim on Chabad, a lot of Chabadim over the world were listening. I was constantly getting emails from Shluchim who are in isolated places, and they thank me for my Shayurim. Okay, period. So people are listening. As a result of the Shayurim, they invited me to the retreat. Now, what's the retreat? Chabad runs the largest extension program of Jewish education in the world. It is called the Rohr Institute, the Rohr Jewish Learning Institute, JLI. Rohr is George Rohr. I happen to know him personally. He's one of the greatest Jews alive. His father, Sammy Rohr, they ran away from Hitler. They wound up in South America. They made a fortune of money. I don't know if they were Chabad from the old home, but they were very impressed with what Chabad was doing in South America. And Sammy Rohr became a multi-billionaire and gave a fortune of money to Torah and particularly to Chabad. His son George, who I believe is, may even be a Yeshiva College graduate, his wife might be a Stern College graduate, I don't know, but very close to Chabad, more than Chabad, this is an individual who loves Balei Tshuva. And this is something your generation can't understand. All of you know, you all laugh at my children laugh, my grandchildren, my wife, everyone laughs at Rakefet, at Noach Rakefet, that whenever he speaks about Balei Tshuva, he cries. All right, that's true. I cry, tears come to my eyes, what I saw with my own eyes at this retreat. So the reason is very simple. I grew up in a world where everyone was running away from Yiddishkeit. Everyone. I've been a Shomer Shabbos since the age of 11. You have no idea what it was in the Bronx. People looked at you like you're crazy, like you're insane. I didn't know any Shomer Shabbos, and there were millions, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Jews. We're talking the Bronx, we're not talking Tashkent, we're talking the Bronx in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, millions of Jews. Wow. But Cardinal Spellman himself was the biggest friend. Anyone who wanted to get ahead in the Bronx had to be a friend of the Jews. But the only one I knew who was Shomer Shabbos, the kids were Shomer Shabbos, and then people over 70, as the Rebbe used to say, he said the same thing about Boston. Yeah, there was Shomer Shabbos, there was Shomer Sunday, there was Shomer Monday, they didn't work, they were retired. Anyone who worked, who was Shomer Shabbos? He worked 5.5 days a week. The Kapinski brothers, they were in their 40s, they were plumbers. Loa Lane, who a grandson of Elia Kapinski, was killed in Hanov in the massacre in the shul. Aryeh Kapinski, Zeichet Tzadik Lefracha. Very sad. So, the George Rohr, I'll give you a simple example. He gives money to Shvatami. Shvatami is not Chabad. Shvatami is a descendant of Rabbi Levin. If anything, in Shvatami, there's Litvisha influence, because Rabbi Levin's son-in-law was Rav Yashiv, and Rav Yashiv's son sits and learns with the Yomo every morning in Shvatami. And it's not Chabad. And when he would come to Israel, in the 80s, the 90s, go to the King David Hotel, all right, his wife would go into the pool, he'd get in a cab, come to Shvatami, to talk with the kids learning there, the Russians, his nachat, to see kids raised under communism, Shaliban Chashk B'Torah. It's a great individual. So he sponsors this outreach is unbelievable. It's tens and tens of thousands of people across the world listening to these classes. They're given by the Shluchim, and the computer is involved. Now, you get to a different problem. Not every shluch can give a class. To teach in Gris Kolel, you have to be able to teach. You have to know something. You have to be unique. This is not everyone can teach here. Not every shluch can teach. The average Chabad shluach is not a gadol b'torah. He got smicha, he learned, but he became a shluach. He was sent out at 24, 25 across the world. So you should know the retreat has people, lamdanim, scholars, who work full-time preparing the curriculum, preparing the courses, preparing the aids that they will have on the computer, the movies, the videos, the charts, the most modern technique. Chabad is unlike other Jews. The literature world spent millions and millions of dollars, wasted millions of dollars. They took Citi Field, demonstrated against the computer. Rakefet feels 100% that if you want to demonstrate, demonstrate against cars. Cars have killed millions and millions and millions of people. The computers, I'm told, it turns you into an apicurist. You see naked women. I don't know. I haven't seen any naked women or any. I don't think I use the computer. My students here in the Kollel taught me. They're the ones who brought me into the world of computer. What I see on, I spoke about Reb Menashe Klein. I got to meet him on the computer. But all right. So someone becomes a Baal Taiva, but he can be Chayza B'tshuva. He's not dead. The cars are much worse. They kill you. Your Chabad doesn't demonstrate, doesn't waste money, uses the money constructively. They take the latest technique, the latest knowledge, so that every Shaluach is computer wise and he has a class to give. Now, the Balabatim who turn out for these classes are already elegant balabatim. These are not Jews who just walk in to daven, to put on tefillin. These are people seeking. The majority of them, I saw this at the retreat, PhDs, MDs, everyone had an I had come to class with my name, Rabbi Aaron Rakefet Rothkopf, and then my wife has Mal, but then I have Blue, presenter. I'm not just one of the 1,200 people there. I'm a presenter, you understand? Was meint das a presenter? I would have to explain to Reb Noach Bornstein, Rebbe, my presenter, das meint das, min git ashir, min sagt im ashir, min sagt im ebis gut for mich. Yeah, I'd have to explain to Reb Noach. Reb Yeruchim would understand already. All right. Gentlemen, lady, it's unbelievable what they do. Now, this retreat, 1,200 people come from all over the world. These are not more people. These are not charity cases. These are people who come. These are people interested. How many is Shomer Shabbos? I was told not more than 30% of the crowd that I'm looking at. But everyone is on a certain level. This one is kosher already. This one is davening. This one is putting on tefillin. And George Rohr flies in on his private jet, speaks, flies out again, and leaves a few million, helps cover the cost of running this program, running the retreat. Not only that, on the college campuses, they have what's called Sinai scholars. What are Sinai scholars? These are kids who sign up to take a course with the Chabad Shaluach, part of this program, prepared on a very high level for college kids, and at the end of the year, they're rewarded with a trip to Israel, Taglit, Chabad, through the Jewish agency, the Taglit program. See, Chabad is so smart. They cooperate with the mainstream. They don't have to raise money for the trip. The same thing in Israel. The Rebbe gave the word right away. All the Chabad schools are part of Mamlachti Dati. This is not Chinuch Hatzma'i. It's not that they had the shno. You don't know what went on in the 50s, the 60s, and the scandals and the money. Today, as a result of Menachem Begin, all the Chinuch in Israel, Chinuch Hatzma'i, Mamlachti Dati, it's all covered by the government. But when it began, Chinuch Hatzma'i was a zerem unto itself. The government didn't pay a penny at first. You have to raise the money. Chabad went, Mamlachti Dati, part of the general system. They didn't have to schnur, didn't have to beg. Okay, so this, what I saw, helped me understand a great deal of what is happening in Chabad today. And I have to say, it does correspond with Heilman and Friedman in this chapter. And let me begin. There's no question that towards the end of the Rebbe's life, the messianicism greatly intensified. You don't have to be a great psychologist to understand it. They were losing the Rebbe. Death, unfortunately, is inevitable. You all know the joke. Death and taxes are the two things you cannot escape. I need not tell you. You grow old. I just walked into the office. Sherry was very sad. She gives me three death notices. She said one of them is a young man yet. I didn't look at it. I see one of them may be a father of someone who studied in the Kollel, a Mr. Zinkin or a Rabbi Zinkin who died. I have to look at it later. But death is inevitable. All right? We're going to lose. We can't win. That's why we write wills. This is why we try to see that our money, what goes on with the children, the great-grandchildren, an intelligent person prepares for the days when he will be gone. Fine. But life continues. Your children, your grandchildren, this is continuity. This is what we just said. We don't want old-time students. We need new-time students. Fine. The Rebbe is on in years, there is no child. It's a terrible feeling. You look at Bells today, Rabbi Avraham Mordechai, the Rebbe's son, is right up there at the head of the table. I'm a Litvak, I look at it, I get upset. Let's see if this little pinhead knows something. Who the heck is he? What are we talking about? He's going to be the head of half a million Hasidim? What's going on here? A Litvak looks at it that way. You have, all right, we knew that your Rebbe is ill, your Rebbe is old, but there's a new generation. They're going to, particularly why you is a public trust. Anyone who has the ability can rise to the top. You don't have to marry the Rosh Yeshiva's daughter. But you see, in Chabad, it wasn't just that the Rebbe is on in years. There is no successor. And it's a very sad, sad feeling. And you got to remember, the Rebbe was so big. No Rebbe and no religious personality since Korban Bias comes anywhere near the influence that this one man had. And this is a fact. I mean, you don't have to be a chassid to say it. This is an absolute fact. The Rebbe influenced. You know today that the world, everyone speaks. Orthodox Jews, Chabadnikim or Lubavitch, conservative, reform. I told you my own experiences. I said to a Chabadnik, I never knew you're not Orthodox. You're a stream unto itself, you know, with the Jewish agency. Anatoly Sharansky, Natan Sharansky, is boasting today. He appointed a well-known Chabadnik, Rabbi David Eliezeri, to the board of governors of the Jewish agency. He says, I now have pluralism. I have Orthodox, Reform, Conservative, have Lubavitch. So the Rebbe, you can understand the Chabadnikim. Yes, yes, Mori.
Why didn't the Rebbe prepare a successor?
You're asking the exact question I once discussed with Dr. Tova Lichtenstein. And Tova's theory, I'm giving you her theory, remember, even though she's a Soloveitchik, it's only a theory, I can't say it's the Baha Hashem. She said she felt the Rebbe held that Kol Zman, he doesn't appoint a successor, he will live. You follow? That he'll be there, his mind will work. That's what she felt. But you're asking a very good question, a man who was so smart and so insightful. But he did tell the Hasidim that if there'll be any question, you go to a posek. If there's any doubt, you have three poskim and you follow the majority, but it's not a successor. You're absolutely right.
I think that this is a complicated subject.
It's
hard when people who are outsiders ask.
No, beside that. I
just want to offer two very quick things.
One is
that people don't realize that there is no one who is even remotely qualified to fill that space. I know you say, well, they should have picked someone who was like the Rebbe in 1950. Or
right, and we'll grow into it.
There wasn't anyone like that who could have taken on that mantle.
I got to tell you, I am a big follower of...
That's exactly how I'm coming. Rav Steinsaltz was not even anywhere on the orbit of anything. He's not even a central figure. He's a chashuv person, but he's not even a central
figure. No, I understand. I would have gone to Rabbi Ginsburg.
But he also is not a central figure in the movie.
I understand, but you got to remember, Rabbi Ginsburg is a gone idea. The
yes,
man's knowledge
he's
is breath,
not,
breathtaking.
He's not a traditional Lubavitcher. He has his own kind of approach.
You have to say that.
The only person that anybody could have even on a tiny level thought of was Raviol Khan. He wasn't ready to be a Rebbe. It's not just because he's a brilliant scholar and a gone is not
okay,
necessarily
so,
from the Rebbe.
Reseda. Okay.
And it doesn't also mean that somebody is a tzaddik.
We hear. Okay, but let me go further.
The Belzer are Rebbe, who succeeded with Aaron Belz, he doesn't even really consider himself the Rebbe.
Well,
I'm serious. He calls himself the Belzer Rav.
The Belz, well, no.
He says from Aaron Belz, huge tzaddik is was really the Rebbe.
Then he's the Belzer.
The chairs and the
but
case,
you got to know.
He's just the CEO of the movement.
The CEO. All right, have
so
it your way.
So Lubavitch has a board of CEOs.
No. But no, I think Morty's question is a very serious question, and I don't know what the answer is. We can give to pull him and theorize.
Well,
and
my personal feeling is that he wanted all of the Hasidim to be his successor.
We'll come back. We'll come back to that. Let me do what I want to say. So there's no question that this messianicism picked up when the Rebbe was ill, when the Rebbe had the stroke, and it was a tremendous shock. The Rebbe is dead. He didn't die suddenly. Remember, I told you last year, and I'm probably the only one in the state of Israel that can say what I'm about to say, and I told it to you last year. I'm the only one in the state of Israel who saw the Rebbe on his deathbed. I don't believe anyone from the state of Israel saw him. The top floor at Beth Israel Hospital was sealed off. Police were there, I'm telling you. And the only ones allowed up were the Gabayim. And how did the little Ani Rothkopf get up there to see the Rebbe? It was very simple, because the head doctor, Dr. Bernie Kabakow, is my bosom buddy. And he should live and be well. And Bernie Kabakow took me upstairs to see the Rebbe. And then I had a long talk with Label Groner. To make a long story short, the Rebbe was kept alive artificially. I told you the police were very concerned that there would be mass suicides when the Rebbe died. They held meetings with all the religious psychologists and psychiatrists that they knew of, including many of my students. There were two or three sessions, how to prepare the masses for the death of the Rebbe. And ultimately, when the Rebbe died, when they could no longer keep him alive artificially, you know, al pi halacha, they could have just, when the fluids dried, stopped. You don't replace it. I don't have to tell you the Rebbe was dead, but they replaced it to keep him alive another month. The idea sunk in, the Rebbe is critical, period. So when the Rebbe died, instead of suicides, you had this thrust that begins the messianic movement. People in 770 drank L'chaim that night. The Rebbe was a Matzai Shabbos, as I recall. The Rebbe's in a higher sphere. And you all know what went on with the funeral. Very interesting, too. I was there. I happened to be in America at the time. What I'm telling you, I don't have to read about. I saw with my own eyes. The police had the cortege leave very quickly. They were fearful of any scenes of mass mourning. Who knows what people will do? And if you were at the funeral, there were tens and tens of thousands of people. And suddenly, the car carrying the body sped out. And before you knew it, they were at Springfield Avenue. They were at the cemetery, the burial. The masses basically didn't get to see anything. And I can tell you that Rabbanis, this was the last time I saw Rabban Soloveitchik alive. This was 1994, and he got there late. He got there, and I comes out of the car, and I told him, Rebbe, they already moved on. The funeral already took place. No one thought it would be mamish to the minute. No hespedim, nothing. Immediately moved on. What happened before, I only found out later, that in one of the houses there, that are part of 7070 complex, they had the top donors to Chabad, among them friends of mine who gave over $1 million a year to the Rebbe. And there they eulogized the Rebbe in a few words, because what Alex said is correct. There's nothing a mortal can say about the Rebbe. He was bigger than life. Who are we that we're going to come and eulogize him? He was bigger, bigger than life. So they worked very quickly. Now, the Messianicism began, and we'll come back to it. But something else happened. The heart and soul of Lubavitch, the majority, and today I hold it to be the overwhelming majority, because I believe as time marches on, Messianicism has faded away. Reality takes its toll. You have today in 770, there's a strong pocket of Messianicism. And in Israel, somewhat in Kfar Chabad and in Tzfat, you still have. But outside of that, all over the world, Chabad today is total normal Chabad as Chabad was. So life has a way of straightening us out, the maelstrom of life. And now what do? The Rebbe is gone. There is no successor. No one proposed a successor. There was no talk of a successor. But here, what Alex said, he said it too sharply. What Chabad decided was that the fact that the Rebbe's not here doesn't mean we can't be his chassidim. We can't be his shluchim. What was the most basic innovation of the Rebbe? And now think for a minute. That the Rebbe was a goon, no one denies. That the Rebbe was mechadesh, whatever he touched, you know how much is being published on the Rambam, where the Rambam over the decades, the Rebbe referred to the Rambam and had something innovative to say. That the Rebbe touched Rashi and had something innovative to say. Whatever he touched, he had a Maimer Chassidus, he dealt with the Tanya, he dealt with the classic Hasidic Chabad Svarim, he had something to add. All right, this is not unique to the Rebbe. Take any great mind, take the Rav. Rabban Soloveitchik once said to me, what characterized my brother, whatever my brother touched, he was Mechadesh. No. Take the Gemara. Do you imagine 200 years from now when thousands of shirim from the Rav will be transcribed? You have any idea how much insight in Shas and Paiskim? No. What about Chumash? Yitz Rubin went every Saturday night, took notes in Boston. Yitz cries until today that the Boston lectures are not published. Am I right or wrong, Rabbi Rubin?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Everything
else. You don't have references?
No, if someone has, they don't really. Whatever. Philosophy. Whatever the Rav taught. Philosophy. Whatever he touched. On that level, he and the Rebbe were not very different. These were two individuals. I mean, I knew the Rebbe intimately. I knew the Rebbe from afar. But these were two. You can't say, let's say, Reb Aaron Cutler. Reb Aaron Cutler, I knew. I learned by Reb Aaron. Reb Aaron was a goan adir, but it was in Shas. It was in Paiskim. It was in Rambam. It was yeshivish. Beyond that, you don't have the whole world. He was never involved beyond that. The Rav, the Rebbe, these were different types of people. There's no comparison. But there was something that the Rebbe had that no one else had. And this was concern for every human being. Beginning with the Jews and going beyond that to the Gentiles. Get them to do a mitzvah. To do something. As the Rav's Rebbe, when the Rebbe always spoke about Rabbi Regensburg, so he used to say Rabbi Regensburg, who was a direct descendant of the Alter Rebbe, Rabbi Regensburg, Rabbi Baruch Regensburg, the Rav's Rebbe in Cheder, used to say, Tut epis Yiddish, do something Jewish, do something more, do something spiritual. Everyone in the world, the Goyim too, the Sheva Mitzvot, I mean the Rebbe's outlook, way, way beyond the little from Jew standing in front of him. And this was totally different. I mean, I went to yeshiva, you know my attitude. I would stand on a corner and put tefillah on. people. You shagots, you don't put on tefillin? Go fly a kite, you idiot, you dummy, you bummy, you crummy. Ugh, I would tell them off. Or later in life, I reached there, why tell them off? Just walk away, tell them, go fly a kite. Was habe ich getan mit dir? I'm a Litvischer guy. Deep down, the Rebbe, just the opposite. What a message. Well, if that's the message, this can continue after the Rebbe's death. More than that, don't we have a klal in the Gemara, shliach adam kemolta, that when you send someone to be a shliach, it's like you. No, you learn kedushin. Ha'ish makadesh bo'u b'shlucha. You send a marriage, the most beautiful moment of life. Okay. Person sends a shliach, give this woman kedushin, and say, Hareyat mukudeshet l'chayim yankel b'kesev zeh kedat Moshe b'Yisrael. And she's mukudeshet l'chayim yankel. Right or wrong? Shliach adam kamoto. You send a shliach, he can obligate you. He buys something, he signs a contract. It's like you're doing it. If shliach adam kamoto, then the Rebbe really is still here, because he has told us your obligation, each one of you has to be a shaluach, has to reach out, has to be makariv, has to enlighten another Jew. And here I'm going to tell Alex something. You think only the Chabad can say this? I got to tell you, the Rav said exactly the same thing in the mid-50s. It was a talk he gave in Yiddish. I transcribed it. I did it in the Kollel before you were born. I did such good things in the Kollel, but it's before they recorded. Before you were born, the Rav gave a talk that, what does it mean to be a rabbi? We have no concept of rabbis. What do we have? What do we have? Every Jew has to do mitzvah. Remember Rakefet's debate with Teddy Friedman? That debate played big at the retreat. A lot of the shluchim quoted me and told me about, they knew about that. Someone, I never knew this, there was a reform rabbi there. I have to thank Rabbi David Eliezeri. And this reform rabbi dropped out of the debate right at the start. He saw it, you know, Rothkopf, Yeshiva, YU, Friedman, President, Rabbinical Assembly. He said, I'm not a heavyweight. I'm just a young rabbi. He saw we were above him. He dropped out. I don't even remember his name. And David Eliezeri sends me a link with the Rebbe giving out dollars. This reform rabbi became a Chabadnik. And he davened in David Eliezer's shul for the last 2 years of his life. You see him with a beard speaking to the Rebbe. He says, Rebbe, ich will makariv sein Yidden. I'd like to reach out to other Jews. How do I do it? And the Rebbe encouraging him. I mean, so what do you mean? Remember what I told Rabbi Friedman? You're a Catholic rabbi. And he said, what do you mean, a Catholic rabbi? In front of 900 people, I was a kid, but I won the debate. I said, do you drive the shul on Shabbos? Of course not. How come you have a parking lot? What are we, like priests and nuns? They have one religion and the Catholic masses have another? If you can't drive, how come they can drive? The Rav said, there's no concept. All Jews have to observe. What does it mean to be a rabbi? You have a responsibility to reach out to other Jews. And the Rav said, nowadays, we all have to be rabbis. We all have to reach out. And here's where Chabad picked up and did something that the Rebbe began. The sixth Rebbe, I can give a little credit, but the seventh Rebbe already formalized it. Shluchim, shliach adam kamoto. The Rebbe said this in Sichot. Following the Rebbe's death, it became infinitely more institutionalized, larger and more successful because the shluchim are keeping the Rebbe's message alive. Very, very fascinating. I'll add to it. There was a debate, I don't know today within if they're still debating, because time has a way of winning out. It's very interesting. You allow, this is why the Rambam that I quoted to you an hour ago, a half hour ago, Yud Bet Hilchot Melachim, the Rambam is so important. When you live it, life has a way of speaking to you. When you live it, you'll know. If you understand, you're caught up. It's a different feeling. It speaks to you. Could you imagine Vic Rain is debating whether he should go back to Florida this year? Because Vic Rain understands when you live in Jerusalem, it's a different type of life. Could I explain this to you in Flatbush? Could I explain this to you in Borough Park in your brother's shul? Could I get up and speak like that in that shul? What do you say, Vic? Absolutely not. You got to live it. You got to feel it. It's the shvung of life, the breath of life. Ah, this is Yerushalayim. This is Israel. I'm home after 2,000 years of exile. I have a fallout ceremony at the Kotel Thursday night. My 13th grandson is getting his kumtar sworn in, his gun, his Bible, whatever they give him. Baruch Hashem. 13. Kanein Hara. They should all live and be well. Gentlemen, you want me to prove it? There was a debate in the inner circles of Chabad. What do you call these Chabadnikim all over the world who today number over 4,000 shluchim? What do you call them? Shluchim of the Rebbe or shluchim of Chabad? And do you see what's happening? It's institutionalized already. Shluchim of the Rebbe. But it's much more than that. Since the Rebbe's death 22 years ago, the shluchim have become the heart of Chabad. It's an amazing thing. It's infinitely more than when the Rebbe was alive. The Rebbe was alive, there were shluchim, there were publications, there was the Rebbe, the public Fabrengens, the Hitva Adut. I don't have to tell you what Yudket Kislev was. Today, you can feel the influence of Chabad all over the world. The shluchim. It's not just shluchim of the Rebbe, it's the Rebbe and Chabad and the Shluchim have synthesized into the heart of what Lubavitch is about in the year 2017. It has given Chabad a collective identity. And when you talk to the young men studying Chabad, the best among them, what is their dream? To become Shluchim. Not only the men. And here I have to stand in awe of Chabad. We are suffering so. Those of you who will attend my Sunday class. We are suffering so with the issue of feminism. I began yesterday. Everyone, thank you for your compliments. But I haven't even begun yet. I'm building a foundation. Yitz, you saw the box I had with all that info. I will get to it. But I want to go shlav, shlav, shlav. We are suffering. Tremendous problem. We live in two worlds. And in the big world beyond us, Hillary Clinton, at least until today, is a candidate for the presidency of the United States. I don't know. No one really knows what happened. And they say pneumonia now. Let's wait and see. And I hear on the internet already, there's people are swearing that she had a stroke a year ago. Have you heard this? When she was out of sight for a while. So who knows what's happening. But anyway, Hillary Clinton, a woman president of the United States, Imagine if they would have told me in 1950, one day a woman will be president of the United States. Cannot be. A woman can be president. A woman can be president of a college. A woman can run a university. Yeshiva University's presence in Israel. Who is running it? Not Rabbi Miller. Not Rabbi Bednarsh. Not Noach Rakefet. As far as I know, her name is my dear student, Stephanie Strauss, married to Alan Strauss, also my student. Stephanie Strauss is the legal signature of this institution, of this property, of this building, of this multi-million dollar existence that we have here. Well, feminism. Why can't we have women rabbis? What is wrong? Why can't we have women leading the tefillah? She has a nicer voice than Alex Glassman. Right or wrong? Why can't we have women reading the Torah? She reads better than Chvais Aaron Rakefet. Believe me. Chabad has totally solved the problem. You have women whose dream is to marry a shluach and to be a shlucha. And I've spoken with these women. I know what I'm saying. And these women, totally, totally integrated. 1,200 people, who is running the show? The women. My wife said to Rebbetzin Eliezeri, you have all these young women directing everyone, running the show. They're all so beautiful. And the Rebbetzin, my student, Stella Ezri, she says to my wife, all the women in Chabad are beautiful. And boy, she's right. What capable women. You see? Solved. There's no problem with feminism there. The men go to the Shluchim conference, the women run the show back home. In many of these synagogues throughout the world, you'll find that the Shlucha is more dynamic than the Shaluach. You saw that in Katamon, in the series, the interaction between the two, the personalities. It's based upon reality. And you see, this is a tremendous credit to Chabad, the Rebbe. It's interesting. The Rebbe and the Rav. I'm not saying they're the only ones, but they had tremendous respect and understanding of the feminine mystique. The Rebbe and the Rav. They have to do with how they were raised, who they married, the traditions in their family, but the concept of shluchim has intensified, I would say, 10 times over since the Rebbe died. And you know the jokes today. You go up to the moon, who do you meet there? The Chabad Shaluach. Not only that, and this too is fascinating. What's one of the big problems about YU? It came to the fore. There's now a change in leadership. I saw the problem with my own eyes. Lack of strong administration. YU in my time, 500 students from the first class in high school to the last year of smicha. Mr. Norman B. Abrams ruled every student from high school through smicha with an eye in hand. If you recall, the doors in YU, on every door there was a window. And they say the windows were put there for Mr. Abrams to stand on his toes, he wasn't too tall, to look into every class and see that the class is behaving and the Rebbe is teaching. All right, he knew everyone. Today you go to YU, thousands of students. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. The right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. I saw with my own eyes 2 years ago when YU wanted me and brought me there. Wow, what a difference. At the time of the Rebbe, there was quite a bit of hefkerut with the shluchim. Who can go, where they go, the Rebbe told him, he sent him, he went, he did. Today, as a result, that there's no Rebbe, and the shlichut or the shluchut has become so critical and so important, it has become very well organized. You have to get permission. They have to tell you where to go. For the first 2 years, they'll help you with the budget. Beyond that, you're on your own. The shluchim are constantly getting information, are being told, are being informed what is happening, how to teach, what is new, all types of curriculums, all types of programs. The Jewish Learning Institute is one example. Much more for the shluchim. Conferences, they are organized. The children, what do you do about the children? Chabad has one of the biggest school systems in the world on the internet. Kids all over the world are learning, are in class with kids hundreds, thousands of miles away. Once a year, they all get together. They meet live friends who are their classmates. They meet them live. It's just amazing what has happened. And all this and all this activity has mellowed the messianic drive, the overtones. Life is real. This is real. Jews, ignorance, lack of observance, enmity towards Yiddishkeit. As one lady said to me, my wife's cousin by marriage, oh, the way you treat Jews, this is in California. This is the seventh generation in America. It's a miracle they're still Jewish. The way you treat women, you put them behind the fence in the synagogue. And she said it with so much enmity. God have mercy. What we have to deal with, what we have to talk about. But Shluchim, this is our goal. One more mitzvah helps the world. The Rambam, Hilchot Tshuva, we have to view the world, it's half and half. Every Jew putting on tefillin, every lady lighting Shabbos candles adds more merit to the world. Now, well, you agree? This is point number one. You'll find it in this volume, but I've added a lot more contemporary material. Point number two is very interesting. And this already is caught up in a bit of conflict. I wondered, Chabad, I know in YU. So Baruch Hashem, plenty of conflict among the Rashi Yeshiva. I know myself, I just saw the 300 rabbis signed that you have to, if any boy or girl comes to you that he or she has been sexually molested, you have to go to the police. I'm sorry they didn't ask me to sign. I would be the first one to sign on. Rabbis have nothing to do with this. We're talking in civilized countries. The police have departments. I know in Israel, people who are specialists. And they're well aware that, you know, you have to know for sure this happened, that it's not just revenge, you're angry at your teacher, etc. They have specialists who deal with it. Imagine a girl would come to me 13 years old, I was molested by my Rebbe. Do I know what to ask her? Do I know how to deal with it? And what am I, a woman? Do you have to have a woman, a trained lady? Oh, wow. Be the first one to sign on. God forbid. Go to rabbis. First of all, every rabbi will be such an amaretz. They're going to bother him with things he knows nothing about. When is he going to learn Shas and Paiskim? But number two, you got to go to an expert. We're not in Uganda here. Talking Israel, we're talking United States of America. I imagine Canada. I can't believe there's a modern police department in the world that doesn't have people trained to deal with these cases. So I see already in YU, two of the Rosh Yeshiva did not sign on. And I saw already this controversy, and believe me, I don't understand it. And two very well-known, two very important Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Schachter and Willick, that's what I'm told, they did not sign on. I don't understand it. I would like to talk with them. But That's not the point. The point I want to make is there's machlokes, there's conflict. There are other questions in YU. Remember the presidency, what happened when they selected Richard Joel and Rosh Yeshiva was saying to Hillen, and they're going to announce shortly who the new president is. I hope that no one will not be, I hope no one will be saying to Hillen, not against him, not for him. So make a mishaberach, he should be matzliach. Okay. Tillim for him, perhaps, yes. Not against him. So I often wondered, the Chabad, and you got to remember, I was with the at this Chabad retreat. There were endless shluchim there. The shluchim humbled me. I don't know, I'm still walking in a daze. Everyone said they're my students. Everyone took pictures with me. I became like a rock star. I'm looking at them. And they all have long beards and Shabbos. They all put on bekishes. They all dressed, you know, like the Rebbe on Shabbos. It's during the week they're dressed in mutton clothes. It's a sight to see. And by the way, what's his name? Dylan, Bobby Dylan. What's the name? The folk singer.
Oh,
Dylan. Dylan. His son-in-law. I was sitting next to him. He was the key speaker Wednesday night. Big, tall fella. I think Himmelstein, if I'm correct. He's also in Hollywood. A guy from like us. To say his Bobby Dylan's daughter, Shomeret Shabbat, his grandchildren, Shomrei Shabbat. We were wearing the same type of tzitzit. We compared our tzitzit. I wear this type. I told him, he says, yeah, he says it's not traditional. I said, look, it's very good to wear these tzitzit because you don't get pimples on you. You don't sweat. And I said, no one is yotzei d'oraita b'zman hazeh. So, all right, it's not traditional. I have grandchildren who won't wear tzitzit like that. They have to wear with a real talis. But I'm very happy that since I entered YU, they came, they sold tzitzit, and the Rebbeim told us to buy, and I'm still using the same type of tzitzit 70 years later, Baruch Hashem. So I often wondered, in Chabad, is there a little conflict? Can it be that all the shluchim think the same way? So I have to tell you, even in Chabad, there's conflict. And here you come. I want to develop the second thought with the shluchim and who they're reaching out to. Now, what do you mean you reach out? Now, what's our goal? Once again, I'll take Rakefet the Litvak and contrast them with the Chabadnik. Rakefet the Litvak, all right, I'm very proud to say that there's hundreds, if not thousands, of people in the world who are from today because they were my students. I had a very great thrill in East Brunswick. I was told in advance that there's a lady there, a grandmother many times over, who claims she was my student in Talmud Torah. I said, what? Talmud Torah? I taught 2 years, 59, 60. I taught in Englewood. I wanted to get married. 60, I got married. We had to make a living. There was no color. That was a different world. 60, I got married. And 60, 61, I taught in Concourse Center of Israel. I ran the minyan. It was a shul without a machitza upstairs, but I davened at the Hashkama minyan. There was a machitza, and then I ran the youth minyan, and I'm told there's a lady who says she was my student. So I come to East Brunswick. We get there. I don't ask about travel and cars. It's impossible. I have to get a private. I'm going to have to borrow a private jet from the George Roar next time. So we finally get to East Brunswick from Queens, only 2.5 hours, Friday afternoon. So the phone rings. A couple would like to see me, Levine. I said, fine. We're going to stop at 7 o'clock. It was about 6 o'clock. And this couple comes. And Sandy rings me her sitter from Concourse Center of Israel with my name in it, with the stamp album I gave her as a gift for being such a good student. And yes, I started to remember this little girl, Sandy Lieb, who loved Yiddishkeit. This is the Bronx. It's a desert. It's not Baltimore. It's not Brooklyn. It's not the Lower East Side. It's not, you got to identify what I'm talking. It's not Washington Heights, Charlie. And this is a girl who, my student, Shomeret Shabbat, children B'nai Torah, grandchildren B'nai Torah. And she said, Rebbe, you were the one. You started me. I couldn't believe it. She shows me the stamp album with words of dedication, the siddur. What a thrill. Her name today is Levine. From Lieb, it became Levine. So I'm happy. Why am I happy? Shomeret Shabbat, 100%. Covers her hair. What more can I ask for? What does Chabad accomplish? What is their goal? Absolutely. Their goal is no different than mine. Their goal is to see every Jew living like a Jew, a Shomer Torah mitzvah. But now let's be honest. Who can you really turn around 100%? Who can you really turn around? He makes the point here, I'm just elaborating. It's what I told the Watsons outside Gris a few, an hour and a half ago, 2 hours ago. What did I tell you? I saw in Queens, students came over to me, carried me on their hands, with students from the 60s, from MTA when I was their Rebbe, giving a shir and teaching them Gefet, Gemara, Perish Rashi, Tosfot. Why? The Kollel. Who's sitting here from the Kollel? 3 students. The rest are guests. Dear students, but guests. The Kollel doesn't give a hoot about me. God, who wants? They look at me, they'd like to influence me. A guy without a beard, without black clothes. I happen to be wearing a white shirt and black pants. It's just by chance I have a Sheva Brachas tonight. Okay. Rabbi Rudman's granddaughter, he was Gatzmichu, and he Reuven Rudman said, Zichron Levracha. So, who do you influence? Oh, when you have a young kid, a teenager, and he has a Rebbe who speaks to him, you've changed him for life. He's Makir Taiva. You get an older person. I told you, my uncle, Zichron Levracha, Max, what was his name? Max Fogel, my mother's kid brother, no, next to the kid. He was brother, he was older. There's only one sibling left alive, that's Murray, the youngest. Max put on tefillin twice in his life. Remember what I told you at his bar mitzvah? And mind you, his father, my grandfather, learned in Volozhin. Learned in Volozhin, when it was reestablished under a fellowship. We will get to it. I'm preparing Sherman Volozhin. In a different world. Oh, you don't know what a world that is. We'll get there. God should spare me. It's a few years from now. Put on tefillin twice. That is bar mitzvah. And at the kotel, the chabadnik put on tefillin. And he was so happy, he boasted about it for years later. You see the difference? It's an older person, right? You got him to put on tefillin. Try to get him now to put it on every day. That's the challenge. All right, she's lighting Shabbos candles. It's an achievement. Yeah. She cooks supper. They watch television. The phone is ringing. The computer. The messages. You see? With older people, the chance, you will, there are some, that you turn around. But percentage-wise, it's much less than a Sinai scholar. The Sinai scholar, you can change his whole life. I heard some of them speak at the retreat. It's a very interesting question. I'll give you a case study. In Washington, I write about the rabbinate. So I think you know, in the rabbinate, I'm very proud. I built the friend. No one remembers it. No one's alive anymore. No one gives a hoot. That's life. You have to make your peace with it. I can't believe that no one contacted me from Maple, South Orange, after Washington appeared. Built the first shul suburban Essex County. No one contacted. No one. Some of the old-timers are alive yet. No rabbi contacted. So on the border of Newark was a shul in Ivy Hill. It's just been written up again. There were articles about Newark and what's happening, and Russians live there and go to the shul today. Cheap area, massive housing, like a Russian construction. It's not expensive. Thousands and thousands of apartments. So they had a YU rabbi there. He's no longer alive. I remember him. character. And he left to go to Baltimore. Easier to raise children in Baltimore than Newark, at that part of Newark, Ivy Hill. Beyond Wellsburg, if you know Newark. So they looked for YU. YU said, yeah, we'll give you a rabbi, but it's the minimum $8,000 a year. They latched onto a Chabadnik who they got for $4,000 a year. Shmuel Pesach Bogomilsky, I think I told you the story. He combed up his beard. I don't know how Chabadnik can do it, but he appeared like a little beard, you know, combed up. And then he got married, and he invited the Balabatim to the marriage, and he went with a bekisha, with a long beard. They wanted to fire him. He went crying to the Rebbe, and he said, Rebbe, I'm having a chabazayfalak mis nefesh, I'm having so much aggravation, and they want to fire me. And the Rebbe said, du vetzbleiben, you will remain there. It's now 60 years later, and he's still there, exactly where the Rebbe told him he will be. It's unbelievable. So what is Shmuel Pesach? When he was called to the Torah, Bogomilsky, any of you recognize it, you know, never. Harav Shmuel Pesach ben Harav Shmuel Pesach. What does that tell you? His father died before he was born. So I got to know him. I got to know his life story. His father was a Litvisha. How does he come to be a Chabadnik? His mother married Bezivik Sheni, a Chabadnik. These were teenage kids later. No, they went to the Rebbe. They became 100% Hasidim. A teenage kid, a high school kid. Someone later in life, it is much harder. And this criticism, how do you view a Chabad shul? Here you have people, Mechalalei Shabbos. They're driving to shul on Shabbat. Chabad will invite people Friday night. The whole question that we've touched upon so many times in so many different contexts. Can you invite someone to your house Friday night if you know they're going to drive? No, you know what Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach said? That you should only if they can stay over. If they don't want to stay, it's their business. But you have to tell them, we want you to sleep. We have a bed. We have a bedroom for you. No, others take, Chabad takes a totally different opinion. Tov sheyichallelu Shabbat Echad, that they should observe Shabbat properly. A Jew will come Friday night and come once, come twice. Maybe he'll be caught up with the Spirit. And maybe he'll become a total Shema Shabbos. And I have to tell you, this just happened. A student of mine told me this yesterday, and I thanked him, because I love good news. I love good news. Student told me, mention his name, David Goldis of Hollywood, Florida. He's an accountant. He has a lot of Israelis who, he's their accountant. Why do the Israelis use him? Because first of all, he knows Hebrew. And he can go back and forth, he can come to Israel, he knows his way around. So a lot of Israelis. So he, Dafka, was telling me about this Israeli customer who was in Las Vegas, totally irreligious, total typical Israeli, good heart, making a fortune, a bundle of money, shacked up with some lady, giving tzedaka, observing nothing. And then he had a bad experience in Las Vegas, three underworld people, I don't want to use the word, three Afro-Americans, I don't want to be prejudiced, so came in, put a gun at him, tied him, put something over his head, a gun here, took all his money, his car keys, the works, cleaned him out. So he said, boy, Las Vegas is not for me, left the lady, goes to Los Angeles. All right, goes to Los Angeles, we'll start up again. He's a businessman. He's a survivor. He calls David. Then David is busy. He didn't feel that good. David didn't call him back. He calls David again. You must call me back. And he tells David, went to Los Angeles and someone grabbed him. David doesn't even know who. I imagine it's Chabad. And he said, David, I had a Shabbos. Never had anything like this in my life. So David figures, you know, chad pami. David calls him a week later. The guy is dancing in the air. Oh, Shabbat, he says, I'm becoming a totally from Jew. So you see, it happens with adults. It happens. They suddenly, people, you hear the Balei Tshuva here in Israel talk on the radio. Oh, what it means, away from the world, away from the computer, what it means to have a wife, to have Taret Mishpacha. I remember one of them talking, he said, that's the word he used about his sexual life. And he says, Achshav Yeshli Tahara, and I wanted to kiss him. Those are the exact beautiful words that one has to use. So you see, let me just end off this point. There's a lot more to talk, but let me end off this point. So look what you wind up with. You wind up with Chabad shuls, the minority on Shomer Shabbos. The majority are on various different levels. This one puts on tefillin. This one lights candles. This one doesn't drive on Shabbat. But he does other things. As I told you, Rabbi Eliezeri said to me at the retreat, maybe 30% of the Balabatim would qualify as Shomrei Shabbat. Some of them, there were Goyim sitting at the table with me. Here was this woman, married to a guy, middle-aged, brilliant people, PhDs. She starts seeking her roots. Now, you got to know, in America, there's no religion today. Obama believes in God. Hillary Clinton believes in God. What are we talking about? It's no religion. Her husband, whatever religion he is, he's happy. She's happy with spirituality. He's sitting there at the Shabbos meal, enjoying it 1,000%. His wife is happy. He is happy. So David Eliezeri writes in the book I quoted, we'll come to this, give me time, but he makes the point that the Chabad shul of today is like the modern Orthodox shul of yesteryear. And boy, is he right. Let me interview two rabbis here. Rabbi Rothkopf, in your shul in Maplewood, South Orange, how many Shomer Shabbos did you have? At first, 5%, 10%, 20%. By the time I left for Israel, maybe 30%. 70% were not Shomer Shabbos, but they davened in the Orthodox shul for whatever reason. It was cheaper. It reminded them of their grandparents. They liked the rabbi. Rabbi Reuben, rabbi in Pennsylvania, what percentage of your Balabatim was Shomer Shabbos? 5%? 5%. Gentlemen, do you get the point?
Yeah.
I'm not criticizing.
I have 11 families to build a sukkah.
No, I
had 20 families every week. I was the delivery boy. I went to Lissa's Bakery and got the challah so they would have shots.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I'm not criticizing, God forbid. And Rabbi Eliezeri said, this is the Chabad shul today. And boy, if you go to the Chabad websites, there already is criticism. This isn't an achievement. This isn't what the Rebbe wanted. He wants total observance. All right, Baruch Hashem. You know what I said about this? Thank God, Chabad is as normal as YU, as RCA, as OU, and all that goes with it. We Jews are cantankerous. Moshe Rabbeinu found it out. Am Kishay Orev Hu. And this is a reality. And finally, I end off the message I got from Chabad that shaped my entire life. I told it to you, I repeat it again. It should be repeated every year that I teach. Ribbono shel Olam, remind me. In the mid-50s, great things were happening in Brooklyn. We heard about it. So a whole group of us from YU wanted to find out what's happening in 770 Eastern Parkway. was in Rabbi Bornstein's shir at the time. He was a senior in high school. So we went for Shabbos to Eastern Parkway. I don't really know who my host and hostess, what their name was, but did they change my life, which influences every word I've ever said in class and influences thousands and thousands of students, and it's due to these people. Why? I was a wise aleck kid, you know, with a lot of questions, and I asked my host and hostess, where are you different than a good at Yisrael? They have beards, you have beards, they dress in black, you dress in black. And he gave me an answer that said it all. Where are we different? If Agudat Yisrael built 50 mikvot, Mizrahi would invalidate those mikvot. If Mizrahi built 50 mikvot, Agudat Yisrael will invalidate those mikvot. Chabad would send a telegram of Yashar Koyach to both Aguda and Mizrahi. Thank God you built 50 mikvot apiece. Kein yirbu v'kein tirbena. And boy, is that a magnificent answer. So I'm happy to see Chabad is normal, even though they look very similar, and somehow their beards and Shabbos become longer. But nevertheless, it's an interesting question. But I have to come down, even though I'm a Litvak, but I'm a Talmud of the Rav, and every rabbi has to be a rabbi, and I know what the rabbinate means. Halavai, we should be mekarev every male Jew to put on tefillin. And then we'll worry further. Halavai, we should be mekarev every female Jew to light Shabbos candles. And when I came back, and I took my wife out to Greg's in the Miller Mall, in Hadam Mall, I love that Greg's there, and I see the Chabadnik coming around with his tefillin, I went over and I kissed. He didn't know I'd hit him. And I gave him a big Yashar Koyach. And I told him he should be successful and have many people that he will put on tefillin in the mall that day. And I saw him at work. And I and Hara, they were lined up. Like a sight to see. Lined up to put on tefillin and say Shema. So Baruch Hashem, I have a lot of freebies today. The freebies of yesterday, what the Yitz wanted, give it time. I will give you that tradition, but give me time to explain it.
I have only one question.
Yeah.
You started off the class very upbeat about how this one is wearing a yarmulke, that one is wearing a yarmulke. But is there a feeling that in the Israeli army, there's an anti-religious movement?
No, there is. What are you talking? It's not that. It's not the old, it's just proving my point. The old left guard that ran the army feels they're choking today. You don't know what's going on in the army. There's World War III, but they can't win. You know why they can't win? Because the population statistics are against them. They may win a struggle here, there, 10, 20 years. It's a different army. Correct. You're quoting me. That was my talk on Mayaka Hanna and Lawrence. Everyone was jumping for joy in the aisles. The gentilized Israeli. Wait till you see the new Jewish action. My article is in it. You'll see. You're absolutely right. But that just proves my point. They feel they're losing it. They feel like Vera Weitzman. They feel like Paula Ben-Gurion. They're choking. They won't be able to eat chaza on Yom Kippur anymore. You follow? It's a sad story. But look on the... I told you, didn't I tell you? Look on Arutz Sheva yesterday, the Kiddush and Havdalah made by the rescue team, the Pikud HaOref, in Tel Aviv, filmed by a guy. It has to be a Russian who's part of the... it is beautiful to see it. The Aluf, the Skanaluf, the head officer, makes the Kiddush. It's a sight to see. It's very, very moving. My dear students, what do we do today? So we picked up exactly where we left off. You see, the summer didn't interrupt our thinking as far as this goes. Although I gave many, many different shurim this summer, none on Chabad. Even at the retreat, I gave three that were not Chabad, only one was on the Rav and the Rebbe, and very soon a book is coming out that we'll talk about in class on the Rav and the Rebbe. So what do we see today? The Messianicism, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, but I think the Rambam Yud-Bet-Bet, Hilchot Malachim, wins out. And if we think that way, it's a very healthy way to think. post the Rebbe, the Shluchim, to a certain degree, the Rebbe has not died. That message lives on. That message is unique. That message is different. You're not going to find that message, not in YU, and not in Lakewood, and not in Ponovich, and not in Merkaz. That is unique to Chabad. Although, Chabad is rubbed off of the whole world. Who would ever dream that Lakewood would have outreach kolalim? And my Talmud, Adam Furziger, says it in his book, After Sectarianism, he makes this point. So either he heard me on tape, or a Rebbe and a Talmud both see the light the same way. Why you got involved in outreach, and I have to tell you, in Israel, what goes on, Kanayin Hara. The question of the shul and one more mitzvah, the ultimate goal, can we achieve it, can't we achieve it? Is Chabad Matan Orthodox? Is David Eliezer right? I think he's absolutely right. It's a fact, it's a reality. Are you satisfied with this? Absolutely not. But thank God Chabad is here, because let's say a Jew like that comes into a young Israel where everyone is Shlomo Shabbos, he can feel threatened. When he comes into a Chabad shul and he's greeted warmly, and, you know, shlav could be, it's much better. My dear students, I'll be very happy if everyone here can bring another partner to come to the Sunday class. It is very, very important what we're doing. And now we're dealing with feminism, and I'm going to deal with Chovev Torah. And then I'm shifting gears, and I'm dealing with Shlomo Lekalbach. I can assure you, in the Sunday class, no one will be bored, even though it opens up a world of responsible literature. But it's life, it's here, it's now. For this class, if everyone can bring an additional person, it will be greatly appreciated, or the Rebbe is just wasting his breath.
How is it that the Kol Little Boys are not required to come?
They're not required. This is only if they need supplementary rabbinic credit. I never require that. I don't want anyone to come to my class by force. But there's no test here, there's no exam. It's supplementary rabbinic credit if you need it. So if they don't need it, the heck with Rakefet, who needs it? Okay, gentlemen, by the way, some of the shluchim are angry at me that I put myself down. I told them I grew up in Slabodka and in Novatek. And you have to understand what that's about, but it's not for now. All right, Randy Zuckerberg, that's the brother of the famous Zuckerberg, co-founder of Sister to Facebook, co-founder Mark, plugs for the Shabbat. And believe it or not, who influences her? Chabad. Take it, Alex, and enjoy it. I have two copies of this. This is unbelievable. It's exactly how Chabad hackers created a worldwide broadcast network in the 1970s. Unbelievable pictures and the whole story of Chabad. Two copies of this as well. This is for Ora. Nechama Leibovich. And again, a conference was held at, I think it's Chovivei Torah, and you'll see my student, they're criticism there. It's a critique of Nechama. Right away, everyone is big enough to critique someone, Zayin. Gentlemen, this is a PhD thesis of, it's published, Dr. Eliezer Katz, it's Leon Katz, it's the Chatam Sofer. It's in Hebrew. Yeah, it's in Hebrew. It was done at Bernard Rebel Graduate School, published by Mossad Rav Kook. This is a printout. Someone sent me of the book. I have the original, so I don't need the printout. If anyone is interested, it's a very fascinating volume. And new work on the Chatam Sofer that I'll quote in class, I'll show it to you down the line, quotes this book with admiration. If anyone is going into Chinuch Ha'er Midei Chodesh B'Chodesho, very proud of it. It's a student of mine who edits this. This is the last Jewish action dedicated to Rabbi Yisrael Belsky. Very fascinating issue, and it gets to tell you who he was. I have to tell you, this is a very big loss for OU, because Rabbi Belsky opened the OU to the right-wing world. They must replace him. And I don't know, you have to find someone who's a Lamdan and is open to understanding the OU. Women leaders speak about their work, their choices, their lives. It's exactly some of the problems we're dealing with. This is for a Chabadnik Der Herr. a Chassidische der Herr. It's about Chabad, Junger Leib, very moving about Rabbi Yochanan Gordon, who I knew. This is the issue that defends Rabbi Haskell Luckstein against the terrible attacks against him here by the rabbinate. And believe me, it is sickening. I can't even comment, it hurts me. But if you want to read a good article, that's that article there. Moment magazine, which tells you what the Jews in the civilized Anglo world are thinking, and thinking about us Orthodox Jews. Here they compare guys with beards with Benedictine monks, etc., etc. Besides, you have to know what's going on in the world. This is someone got married in Chabad, and he gave a wedding gift. They give a wedding gift. He reprinted about, this is a relative who was a Tamim killed by Hitler, about his life. And this is an article on the difference between about Torah Tamimim, about a Chabad yeshiva and a Litvish yeshiva. If anyone is interested, this is an article from Skula magazine that I quoted on the maid of Ludmir, the only woman who has been a Hasidic Rebbe until now. She took kvitlach and gave brachot, and men waited online to see her in Yerushalayim. So that is fascinating. And finally, an article about our own Kollel. This is a graduate. This is Yitzi Glick, brother of the Chaver Knesset, Yehuda Glick. This is Rabbi Hasmicha from YU, an emergency medical doctor, lives in the Gush Etzion area. And it's about his work with the Arabs there, that he goes into the villages and gives them medical help, doesn't charge, and he walks without protection, without a gun, and everyone relates to him, b'kavod, and halavai, we could do that all over. Finally, until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya. Vic, did you get home safely last night? And hard or quick? Well,